Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo, and this is the Tech Guy Podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, January 26th, 2008. This is show 425. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, wow. It's time to talk technology. Love doing this every day, every weekend, every week, I guess. At 8888 Ask Leo. That's 1-888-827-5536 for the alphabetically challenged. Or 8888 Ask Leo. We talk about tech, not just computers. I know most, there are computer radio shows out there. Actually, some of them should just be called Windows radio shows out there. No, I hate to be limited to just that. I'll talk about Windows if you want, or Mac, or Linux. I don't think I could do much about Solaris, but I'll try. The internet, of course. Can't. I mean, nowadays that's where all the most interesting stuff lives. But also, we talk about technologies of other kinds. Cell phones. Heck, cell phones are probably the number one selling computer of all. Billion sold last year. A billion with a B. There were only maybe 300 million computers sold last year. We talk about home theater. Anything with a chip in it. Camera phones. What else? Digital cameras. We talk about camcorders. All of that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. I'd love to hear from you. 8888 Ask Leo. And it can be a question, of course, but it could also be a comment, a suggestion, a good idea, a better way to do something, a response to something silly that I might have said. All of that is more than welcome. Because really, this is kind of a collaborative show. You know, it's interesting because the promise of new media, of podcasts and video and, all the internet stuff, the promise of it is that it's interactive, that it's a conversation, not a monologue, like, quote, old media was a monologue. But, talk radio has never been a monologue. That's what I've always loved about it. That's why I've done it for the last 20 years, because it's about a conversation. So that's why it's so important. That's why I always start every show by giving out the number 8888 Ask Leo. And we'll talk about anything you'd like to talk about. I guess I should start with the big story of the week. I don't normally cover financial stories. That's not my thing, man. That's not my thing. But boy, when you look at the stock market tanking this week, and I guess it's been kind of up and down, but it started very poorly. Not only in the U.S., but worldwide. And then you look at what's happening in the tech world. You have to say, what? Huh? What's going on? I started with Apple. Apple had the best quarter it's had ever. Sold more devices, Macs and iPods, than it had ever sold before. It made more money than it had ever made before. And the response of the stock market was, take about 5-10% out of the stock. Just kill the stock. Just kill it. I guess, I don't really understand how financial markets work. But I guess, the old adage is you buy on the rumor and you sell on the news. So Apple stock went up quite a bit right before Macworld with the rumors of all the things they were going to announce, right? And then its stock tanked after. Everybody sold it. Now, I'm not sure I really understand this, but anyway, That's what happened. And it's a very strange thing. Somebody will have to explain this to me sometime. Part of what happened was that Apple gave a advisory and a warning that they may not have such a good quarter next quarter. It'll be up, they said, but not up quite as much, or the growth rate will slow. And for some reason, Wall Street is so much more interested in the growth rate than they are in the growth that it just killed them. Apple made their revenues were $9.6 billion in the quarter in 3 months. Profit of $1.58 billion. Record sales of both Macs, iPods, and iPhones too. And even for software. 53% year-over-year growth in Macs. I think we're starting to see switching happen big time. 38% growth in laptops. 22.1 million iPods. That's 5% growth from per unit growth, and 70% over the year, the quarter last year. 17%. 22 million. And a lot of analysts thought, well, the iPod's saturated. Everybody who wants one has got one. They sold 2.3 million iPhones. The retail stores had record results. 53% growth over last year. Unbelievable. And the stock, bang. I just don't get it. Although, I don't buy tech stocks. I had a few shares of Google, which I've divested because I always is embarrassed to have to say, and I have a few shares of Google. So I got rid of that because Caesar's wife must be above suspicion, right? So I'm not, and the truth is I never really thought it wise, not only for ethical reasons, but I just don't understand how the stock market works well enough to understand, for instance, why you would sell a stock when their revenues were record. But, that doesn't make sense to me. Microsoft had a great year. The next day, they announced their results. Second quarter revenues of $6.48 billion, up 30% year to year. Not quite as much as Macintosh, but nothing to sniff at. Xbox sales up 70% year to year. Just amazing. Actually, their revenue, I'm sorry, I misstated their revenues. $16 billion. $16 billion. So while we may be going into a recession, while the economy may not be doing very well in the U.S., you can't say tech didn't do well in 2007. Tech did very well. Huge growth. Windows sales, Vista sales, a little disappointing for Microsoft. They sold 250 million computers, or I'm sorry, 250 million PCs were sold, not by Microsoft, but in general. And only 100 million copies of Vista, which means that 150 million computers were sold last year running XP, I guess, or Linux, or something besides Vista. So while they sold 100 million copies of Vista, which sounds pretty good, it in fact is a far fewer than they ought to have sold. They should have sold 250 million. They should, had Vista been a success, they would have sold Vista on every PC, right? Or almost every PC sold in the year, and they didn't. Nevertheless, a great quarter, and even some positive news with Vista sales. Vista sales even starting to ramp up, which must have been a concern for Microsoft. Now, the funny thing is, the news is starting to leak now of the next version of Windows. It's inevitable. Won't take as long this time around. Windows 7 may even be out as early as 2009, as early as next year. Maybe a little bit of a response to the knocks on Vista. It will have many of the, it basically will be Vista. This is pretty much the way Microsoft works. They're not going to rewrite it again. It'll basically be Vista with some of the features that they couldn't get in time, like maybe the databasing file system that they had promised. So get ready. And maybe, you know, I think a lot of people are choosing XP more and more. I think that's the case. I'm running Vista in most of my machines, but many, many people are opting out and saying, nah, you know, I like XP. It's working for me. It's patched heavily. It's doing well for me. Runs everything I want. I'm going to stick with it. And it may be that this Vista will be one of those leapfrog releases where everybody skips it and goes to Windows 7. I don't know. Microsoft's revenue over client, they call it client revenue, which is basically software, the Vista and XP, grew 16%. And since they say new PC sales came in at up 14 to 16%, that's about right. Well, that is about right. Almost every PC sold contained a copy of Windows, but what they left out was it mostly was Windows XP. Mostly Windows XP. So maybe Windows 7 is the sweet spot. Remember Windows ME? Microsoft went from a very strong, very credible Windows 98 SE. A lot of people used to Windows ME, which was a nightmare. And even at that time, I told people, don't get it. I think a lot of people skipped Windows ME and went right to the next version, Windows XP, which was much better. Much, much better. Maybe that's what's going to happen with Vista. They just skip it. It'll be a leapfrog version of Windows. I don't know. Seems like a good idea to me. All right, we'll talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. I'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about, any questions you've got. If you don't understand what's going on with your technology, your computers, your cell phones, your home theater, if you'd like to know more about how to buy it, maybe you read an ad that doesn't make any sense at all, 8888 Ask Leo. That's 1-888-827-5536. Our home theater expert, Scott Wilkinson, is coming up in about 15 minutes. But your calls are next. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ask Leo. That's the number. Mary is on the line from Atlanta, hot Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Mary. Leo Laporte here. How are you today?
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Well, we met a couple times through Tech TV. Changed my life, and you are primarily the person who accomplished it.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
Well, I appreciate it. I've had health challenges over the years, and intervening and computers have kept my head in the game, and I appreciate it very much.
That's one of the great things about computers, isn't it? Is that you can use them anytime, anywhere, no matter what's going on in your life. So good. I'm glad
you
did that.
Yeah, when circumstances make your world smaller, the computer helps keep
exactly.
it a little bit
yeah.
bigger. So
yeah.
I have a couple of questions, if I may.
Sure.
I currently have a G4 1.67
okay.
PowerBook,
yep.
17-inch, so it was a bit of an investment,
oh, yeah.
running a gig and a half of RAM,
yep.
and I have a second laptop, a MacBook, 2 gigahertz Intel Core Dual, and obviously, the two platforms there, I'm curious about when you would recommend replacing the hardware in the PowerPC in terms of it being, you know, moving into
right. Well, because it's PowerPC and it's not Intel, of course, the future is all with the Intel stuff. I'm glad you have an Intel MacBook. You probably notice big speed differences.
Well, I do, and that another part of the question, though, was software. I haven't gone to Leopard with either one of the machines yet, and I've been deciding between Office for Mac 2008 and iWorks, and generally speaking, you know, wondered what your thoughts were on Leopard and those two pieces of software.
I like Leopard a lot. There are a few things that people don't like about Leopard that are a little odd. For instance, I was a little disappointed that they changed how the dock worked to such a degree that it's less useful, which doesn't, you know, I don't understand why you would change something that's working that people are using. They put this new stacks feature in, and it just doesn't work as well as the old hierarchical menus on the dock. But it's little things like that. In general, I think you're going to want to go to Leopard for a few reasons. First of all, as with any operating system, you know, Apple or any company, Microsoft, are going to support the current operating system better. Patches faster, you know, that kind of thing. It also has under the hood, and this is the more important of the two, it has under the hood some real advantages, some real additional features that you'll start to see. We don't see yet, but we will start to see software take advantage of. So I think new software coming out is going to not necessarily require Leopard, but will work better in Leopard or will have better functionality under Leopard. You can move to Leopard on either machine. Leopard will work fine on that old G4. You know, it's one of those things where the newer operating systems usually take a little more power, a little more RAM. I don't notice that so much with Leopard. I think it runs pretty well on an old G4. I think mostly you're going to want to go to Intel just for speed. Notice that nobody yet, to my knowledge, has made a program, an application that requires an Intel Mac. Almost everybody, with a few maybe oddball exceptions, is making it universal. That means it'll run on both your old MacBook or PowerBook and on your new MacBook just fine.
I did find that new Dictate, that Mac Speech Dictate software,
that requires
Intel.
Yeah, you're right. Boy, you found the one. You're right. That's going to require Intel. And if that's something you want to use, that would be a compelling reason to go. Everybody, by the way, they showed this at Macworld. I don't know if it's out yet. They said we have a few more weeks to work on
February 15,
it.
I think.
Yeah, but everybody who played with it at Macworld said this is a killer product. We haven't had good speech dictation for a long time on the Mac. On the Windows side, Dragon, naturally speaking, is just great. And this uses the Dragon engine, but makes it Mac-ish. And apparently, everybody who played with it, including Jason Snell, my friend Jason Snell, is the editor of Macworld magazine, just really raved about it. So Mac Speech is going to be an important program. And if you're using dictation software, yeah, that's going to be a compelling reason to go Intel. At least you can use it on your MacBook.
Well, the reviews I read of iListen were
iListen
terrible.
Isn't very good, yeah. No, this actually works. I didn't try it. But it actually
but
works.
But you heard good words.
Yeah, I heard very good things from people I really trust. You know, my problem with dictation is, and even Dragon, naturally speaking, it's 95-96% accurate. But those four words in 100 make a difference to me. I don't want to have to stop every fourth, right. every 25th word and fix it. So, but if you can't type, if you've got carpal tunnel, or if it's just a lot easier for you to dictate, some people it's easier for them to write, for instance, by speaking than by typing. If you can't type at all, this is going to be a program to look for. And there won't be there's technical reasons why that has to be Intel. It's based on Dragon, naturally speaking. It's based on a Windows product. Most of the time, though, you know, barring that, you're going to see stuff still come out for your PowerBook. I wouldn't worry too much about that.
And in terms of iWorks and Office for Mac 2008, I'm running 2004.
I would not upgrade to 2008.
You would not?
No. I don't see any major improvements, except that it's Intel. But I don't notice it being a lot faster. And the only real reason you'd want it is so that you can read documents created with Office 2007 on Windows, because they have a new format. But there are free programs that will do that for you. Unless you're working with somebody who is adamantly, and most people don't do this, adamantly insisting, I've got to use the new Office 2007 file formats. Most people don't, because it's only compatible with Office 2007. So it doesn't even work with the older versions of Microsoft Office for Windows. So I think that there's no real reason to upgrade. iWork is great. I really like iWork. I would get that anyway.
So a good compliment for me carrying Office Mac 2004 would be iWork 2008.
Yeah. I no longer put Office on my system because Pages reads Word documents so well. Numbers does so well. That's the way I go. Hey, we got to run, but I think you're in good shape. Don't feel obligated to spend, really. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, coming up. Automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and you're taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. But we're going to take a little break from calls right now because we want to say hi to Scott Wilkinson. He's editor for the Ultimate. Now, tell me, it's the Ultimate AV Guide, right?
Ultimate AV is the name of the publication.
Ultimate
the
AV.
And it's a website, really. It's not a print magazine. And the URL is ultimateavmag.com. The reason the mag's on there is because it used to be a print magazine.
Right, right.
And there is already an ultimateav.com, which I think is a, you know, a retail store someplace. So
ultimateavmag.com. You got the CES show report up with lots and lots of stuff now.
Boy, we really covered it.
Wow.
Which is hard to do, you know, as you know. It's almost 2 million square feet of convention floor space, and then there's 10 hotels or something with a bunch of stuff going on. So it was pretty wild.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to see this, and I'm glad to see you right there on the front. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was 2 years that I was gone from that site, and now I'm back and at the helm and working
That's very hard to
make sure that that I fulfill the website's mission, which is to help people get the very best quality home theater experience they possibly can, both by steering them in the right direction of products to buy, and also once they have products, how do they get the most out of them? How do they set them up? How do they? Where should they sit? So on and so forth. Also, what are the best movies? We've got some great movie reviewers who put up reviews of Blu-ray and HD DVDs, probably more Blu-rays these days.
Yeah. I wonder, will you stop reviewing HD DVD titles?
Not as long as new ones come out. And
I guess so.
And they're, you know, they certainly haven't stopped yet. Warner Brothers is saying, I think May or so is they're going to continue to do both until mid-year roughly. So, you know, we're going to still see some new titles. Universal announced that they were dropping HD DVD exclusivity, but that doesn't mean that they're going to stop publishing HD DVDs necessarily.
Right.
Now, we don't know. We're waiting to see what happens there.
I think it's a phase out. I think this is the beginning of the end.
I tend to agree at this point. I'm kind of sad about that in a way. I mean, I'm glad if the format war is coming to an end, I'm thrilled. That is just great because format wars never help anybody.
Right. And it's not like Blu-ray is worse in any way than HD DVD.
No. Well, except in one way, which is that the Blu-ray camp decided to roll out various features such as picture in picture and online interactivity from the player and advanced forms of copy protection and so on. And every time one of these new features appears on a disc, many Blu-ray players can't play that disc. And so you have to wait for the company who made the player to offer a firmware update, which
you know, it
have
says that
for.
Every time I open a disc, it says that on my HD DVD discs too. There's a little slip of paper in there. It says you may have to update to watch this disc.
That's correct. Now,
how much of that is copy protection, and how much of that is actually features?
Well, in the case of HD DVD, it is not additional copy protection.
My interpretation was if they have to revoke keys, which they could do with the AACS feature,
right? Right.
This would then that thing wouldn't play if the key's revoked. You'd have to go online and get a new key.
That's correct.
So
that's
they're
correct.
Kind
that's
of planning ahead for key revocation.
Yeah,
I
suspect that's true. And especially now since I'm pretty sure I read someplace that AACS has in fact been hacked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so is Blu-ray. It didn't take long for either.
BD Plus, I think, is the new Blu-ray copy protection. And that got hacked like almost immediately.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to distract you. What would you like to
That's
talk
right.
about today?
I want
people to know where to go. UltimateAVMag.com.
UltimateAVMag.com, yes. And as I said, our mission is to promote the highest quality home theater experience that is possible.
Yeah.
And another of the missions that we have is to establish as much of a dialogue as possible with readers. We really want to get readers involved in the site. I noticed at the beginning of the show today you said, you know, that the new media is a
A conversation.
Yes. Yeah, bi-directional.
Yes.
And And websites are perfect for that.
Oh, yeah.
And so we want to establish a bidirectional conversation with our readers. And so my blog, I did my first blog this week and said this is what we want to do. And it took the company most of this week to get my email up and running for the company, but now it is. And I'm going to do something I think might be a little dangerous, but I'm going to give it a shot, and that is to give out my email address on your show.
Get ready.
I know. I'm going to get inundated, I suspect. And it may be that I won't be able to answer every question because I suspect that there will be a lot of people writing in, but I'll certainly do my best. I still got to save a little time to do some reviews, you know. But on the website, I have invited people to write my email address. And what I'm going to use my blog for, as a matter of fact, and this is why I want why I want to give out my email address, is that instead of pontificating, which, you know, most blogs are, and I could certainly do that, and it's quite tempting to do so, in fact, but I think I'm going to start using that blog instead to answer reader questions.
Great.
So readers can write me a question to my email, and, you know, I can't answer every one in the blog, I'm sure. There'll be way too many for that, but, you know, I'll pick ones that I think are representative, that I think probably a lot of people are wondering about, you know, and then I'll answer that in my blog. I'll post the question and I'll say, okay, here's my answer to that. And I hope that that provides a good service to people.
Excellent.
So here it is.
I'm ready. I'm writing it down. We're going to put it in the show notes. Get ready. Yes.
It's my name, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, dot Wilkinson, W-I-L-K-I-N-S-O-N, at SourceInterlink, which is the name of the company that publishes UAV.
Okay.
And that's S-O-U-R-C-E-I-N-T-E-R-L-I-N-K, all one word, .com.
All right. We'll put it in the show notes, too, if you missed all that.
Yeah, if you missed that, yeah, go to Leo Show Notes and get it there. And again, This is a risk I'm taking here.
No. You know, I have to say, and that's why I said that at the beginning. Nowadays, it's when you're creating media, you're not just creating a show or a column. You're creating a community, and that's the best thing about it. That's the fun part.
It is the fun part, actually. I at first, when I first started getting into web stuff and being online, I was a little nervous about it. And I'll admit, I'm kind of an older fart. You know, I'm not one of these youngsters who does three things at once all the time. You know, the kids today do their homework and listen to internet radio and chat and IM and stuff all at the same time. I can't do that. I've got to be focused on one thing at a time. Right. I wonder, in fact, about how effective people are when they're doing this multiple things at once. You know, are they really getting the information that they're studying, for example, while they're doing their homework? I have my doubts about that, but maybe they are, and that's fine. Be that as it may, I myself need to concentrate on one thing at a time. So I was a little nervous about, you know, doing all this stuff on the web, but living on web time is another thing.
You'll get used to it.
I know.
Welcome to my world.
Well, I've been on the web now for a while, yeah. And I am kind of more used to it. And that's one of the reasons I accepted this job as the editor of UAV, is that I felt finally ready to live on web time all the time.
Great.
And one of the nice things about it for me as an editor is that I don't have a monthly deadline. I don't have to make sure I get a product in and reviewed in time to make this issue, you know, or that issue, you know, the January issue, the February issue. I can, as soon as I get a product in, I can review it, I post it, and it's done.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to post things, you know, on a much more regular basis. You know,
yeah, that's the downside to it.
Exactly. The beast must always be fed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you never get kind of any downtime. You know, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm very excited about it. I've already gotten a bunch of great comments. Oh, and the other thing that I solicit from readers who are going to email me is tell me what you want to see on the site. I'm working now on trying to establish a mix of different kinds of products. We've got video displays, and among those we have flat panel, plasma and LCD. We have front projectors, we have rear projectors, although less so probably as time goes on. We've got audio video receivers, separates, you know, pre-pros and power amps. We've got speakers. So I'm trying to establish a mix of those, as well as a mix of very high-end stuff versus more mainstream stuff that people can actually afford. Because I think it's important to include some very high-end stuff, if not for anything else, then as aspirational.
Right. Drool, you know? Factor.
Drool factor, drool, yes. Factor. I mean, all of us geeks like to drool, right?
Yeah.
So I want to put some of that stuff up there, but I also want to put a lot of stuff up there that is more affordable, more attainable by the average person. One question I got was, can you review the Scepter 46-inch LCD available at Costco and Sam's Club?
Oh, boy. You know? Yeah. We're talking now really third-tier companies.
We're talking third-tier companies. That's exactly right. Yeah, but, yeah. You know, one of the things that I heard long ago was when a radio station or a TV station gets a letter, or even the politicians, when they get a letter from a constituent, they have to assume that it represents the opinion of some thousands
of people.
A lot of people are probably asking the same question,
right?
But I haven't written.
That's exactly how I treat it. If somebody calls in and asks a question, I figure that's something a lot of people want to know. And
exactly.
I think a lot of people do want to know. They may not buy a Scepter or an Olivia, but they want to know, what am I giving up when I get a lower or less expensive high def TV? What am I missing?
Exactly.
And maybe it's something I don't care about.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. By the way, I wouldn't put Olivia in third tier. I'd probably put them second tier. Olivia makes some excellent, excellent products.
Yeah. I don't mean anything by saying second or third tier. It doesn't mean they're bad. It just means they're not well known, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah. They're not a Sony or a Samsung or a Panasonic or something like that.
I had a couple of friends said to me, what plasma HDTV should we buy? And I remembered your recommendation. I said, get a Kuro. They got it. They're so happy. So, Scott, we got to run. It's great to talk to you. We'll talk every week, 11:30. Scott Wilkinson at sourceinterlink.com. Take care.
Thank you.
Guy, 8888, ask Leo's a number. That's 1-888-827-5536. Paul's on the line, Toronto, Canada. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Leo, how are you?
I'm great, how are you doing? How's the weather in Toronto?
Good.
Are you freezing?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
First of all, I'd like to say thanks for all the kind words on your podcast.
Oh, Jumping Monkeys. Yeah, we talked about Paul was doing a job interview, and the interviewer started talking about a podcast that we had mentioned Paul on, and he started telling Paul's story, and Paul said, that's me. Did you get that job, by the way?
Yes, I've been around it for 3 weeks now.
Excellent. Congratulations.
So, yeah, it was a small world.
It is a small world. It's so funny.
So, I have a question about my home theater, which ties in well for your last segment.
Yeah.
I have a nice big 55-inch Sony rear projection, and I've hooked it up to my Wii and my 360.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be nice.
And I'm using the 360, the Vista Media Center, as a DVD player. Mm-hmm. I have two 500 gig drives. Full of ripped movies
on your PC, and then you just
I use the Slysoft
software. And you use the media connector to put it on so that you can stream it to your Xbox Live. That's great, or Xbox.
Yeah, because with three small kids, I don't want them to be touching DVDs all day.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Now, one of my hard drives died, which I lost about 100 movies. I have the movies that I got to do them again, but I was wondering. For, believe it or not, a terabyte of storage isn't enough for me.
Wow.
So I was wondering if I should go with a Drobo or with a Windows Home Server.
Ah, that's a very good question, and there are definite differences Drobo is basically a big USB drive. Now, I know they're going to do an Ethernet-connected version down the road, but right now it has to be connected directly to the PC via USB. Now, the advantage of the Drobo is it's a little pricey. I think it's $4.99 without any drives at all. But the advantage of it is you can then slot in. It has four slots. Any combination of drives, and unlike say a Windows Home Server or any RAID 5 setup or any network attached storage setup, it's not doing RAID, but it's doing basically the functionality of RAID with a slight difference that it adds all the drives together. With normal RAID, it assumes that each of the drives is the size of the smallest of the four. So if you put a 500, 500, 160, 500, it assumes you've got 460 gigabyte drives instead of 3 500s and a 160. The Drobo says, oh, he's got 3 500s and a 160. It's nice that way. It takes only SATA drives. So you'll slot in any SATA drives you've got lying around. It adds them up. It is redundant. For instance, I started running out of space, so I took out the smallest drive, 160 gig drive, bought a 500, slotted the 500 in. It automatically, I didn't lose any data, rebuilt the whole thing and added that capacity. So that's very nice. Right now, you could get 2 terabytes in there by putting 4 500 gigs. But add that up, you're talking now $4.99 US plus maybe another 500 for 4 500 gig drives. You're talking almost $1,000. You can get a Windows, the HP Windows Home Server for a lot less. And I think Windows Home Server advantage is it's Ethernet. Depending on the hardware and how it's configured, it could just be a big hard drive, or they could put a RAID in it. It just depends on that's up to the manufacturer. Windows Home Server doesn't specify, I don't believe. I'm not sure, but it depends on what the I believe the hardware manufacturer gets to do what he or she wants to do. In this case, right now you're looking at the HP.
Probably, that's what I thought.
The MediaSmart. Yeah. And let me see if they do. Do they use RAID or do they use... protect your data. It doesn't, that's the problem. The other side of this is it's kind of designed for unsophisticated users, so they may not give you all that information. It looks like...
Yeah,
let's see. There are 4 drive bays. Windows Home Server will be more flexible. For instance, it will support Xbox streaming on that box.
Yes.
So you could put all your data on there. You don't have to leave the PC on.
That's true.
So I think for you, I think you're going to save money. It's only about, it's under $400 for the Windows, the Media Smart Server. Looks beautiful. Looks, and it's going to give you more capability because it's Ethernet based.
Gotcha.
The Drobo, you'd have to leave your PC on.
I do anyways, but yeah.
And it's like a big backup drive is all the Drobo is. The home server is a server. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Great to talk to you, Paul.
Same here.
All right.
Miss you in Toronto.
I know. I haven't been back in a year, and I feel kind of sad about that.
And the building I'm working in is actually the one that No Regrets is in.
Oh, we used to go there for our meetups all the time. That's a great location. Well, Paul, it's great to talk to you, and I'm glad you got that job. That's fantastic. Congratulations. Now you're starting to figure out what to spend it on. Windows Home Server is new from Microsoft, and the idea is more and more people are have multiple computers in the house with big data backup needs and maybe wanting to serve media, music, photos, and videos over their network. So Windows Home Server is designed around that. You get a lot of capacity, up to 2 terabytes right now. No, it says 6 terabytes. That's a goodness, because that's 4 drive bays plus 4 USB ports. So that's where they get that 6 terabytes. And I guess as drive capacities get bigger, it could be even bigger than that. And because it's a server, it allows you to do things like, for instance, put all your videos on there, plug it into your network, configure it to serve the video, and now if you have an Xbox also on the network, it'll see the home server, and it can serve the video up from it. It'll use Windows Media Player to serve music. Same thing. It has photo sharing software as well. It works with iTunes as well. So that's where you get the flexibility. And you just plug it into the Ethernet. And the other flexibility is it doesn't have to be on your PC. It could be in a closet. It could be somewhere out of sight and out of mind. That's why more and more people are moving to this. It's technically a network-attached storage. In this case, it's a full server as well. There are other good network-attached storage units that use Linux. They may not have all the capabilities of the Windows Home Server. In most cases they do. That's what I use, is a Linux network attached storage. I use a Drobo as just a big old backup drive. I use it for Time Machine on the Mac. It works great. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. 888-88-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Great to talk to you today. We're talking about high tech, and I'm glad you could join the conversation. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. And we talk about a very wide-ranging number of topics, not just the new media, the internet, computers, cameras, cell phones, home theater, I mean, just anything having to do with that stuff. If it's got a chip in it, we'll talk about it. Do you see this? That Charter Communications, big cable company, inadvertently deleted 14,000 email accounts. It was a glitch in software, they said. That's always the blame the software during routine maintenance. Blame the software. Don't blame the tech who accidentally typed RM-RF*. Blame the software that did what the tech said. 14,000. Worse yet, the company said there's no way to retrieve the messages, the photos, the attachments. They're gone. Here's the problem. According to Anita Lamont, a Charter spokeswoman, Charter gives each broadband subscriber a free email account, but since many people use other email addresses, the company routinely deletes unused accounts. On Monday, some active accounts wound up being deleted with the inactive accounts. Oopsie. Ooh. Boy, I'd be bad. I'd be a little angry. But the reason I bring it up, I mean, these things happen. Big mistake, but these things happen. They didn't have a backup? That's a little weird. Spend some money. You got Charter, you got 2.6 million subscribers. You do internet, TV, and telephone service in 29 states. Have you heard of backup? Have you heard of backup? But the thing that's really important for everybody now listening is, don't assume, even if you have a ISP who's big, that they're intelligent, especially if they're a cable company. You might want to make backups of your own data. And I have to say, I completely fall for this all the time. I assume that Google, for instance, backs up my Gmail account. That Flickr, which is owned by Yahoo, backs up my photos. Now, I keep copies of stuff I really need, but I just kind of assume that the stuff that lives online is being backed up. Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe we should, maybe if you've got email on an internet service provider, you shouldn't leave it on the server. You should download it onto your computer, or better yet, leave it on the server and download it onto your computer. Keep a copy of it. Keep a copy of it. Apparently, now I'm talking in the chat room, by the way, irc.dslextreme.com if you want to join them, irc.dslextreme.com, or you can go to techguylabs.com and click the chat link. Our website is techguylabs.com. Mechman's saying in the chat room, Charter couldn't back it up because for legal reasons, they can't back up email. That's bogus. That's completely bogus. Sorry, don't buy it. You've already got one copy. You're telling me you can't make a backup? Come on. Please. You already have a copy. There's not a privacy issue here. You have to follow rules. You can't keep the backup if the user deletes the original, that kind of thing. But that's all done. That's all done. That's doable. Come on, guys. Make a backup. But as users, we got to now realize, you can't assume that it will always be backed up. I have a good friend, Alex Lindsay, who says, no file is saved unless there are two copies in two separate places. That's true. Something we should all keep in mind. It is not saved unless there are two copies in two separate places. One copy of anything is as good as saying, I don't care about it. Mark in Winnetka, California. Hello, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, you are the bomb diggity, baby.
Hey, thank you, baby. What can I do for you?
I haven't talked to you for a couple of years since I was looking for a new browser, and I was having all those denial of service attacks by Yahoo guys.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, did you ever solve that?
Well, I'm high speed now instead of dial up.
That helps.
And I have a router, to hide behind. And my new browser, by the way, I had experience with Opera and of course Firefox now, but I went to one called Slim Browser, which has all kinds of search engines built into it, translation of languages and stuff like that. So I'm really happy with it.
Good. Now, don't forget when you use things like the Slim Browser that you're essentially using Internet Explorer.
Yes, I realize that. Yeah, it has some of the better aspects of the others as well.
Yeah, all they've done is they've kind of customized IE, which is totally doable. But the reason I say it's important to remember that, and there are a lot of browsers like this, that's great. You can use them. But any exploits, any security vulnerabilities that IE is heir to, you are also prey to because it is IE.
Well, if I could see, I'm a freak. I like to have as much maximum screen as I can, and I can eliminate this down to tabs.
I agree. It's a great browser. We've recommended it for years, but it's a great browser.
And then I can crowd them all onto one above the tabs, everything I need.
Right.
So it's really slim, as they say.
Yes.
But any event, I'd like to tell you that this whole nightmare with the nanny state Vista is just driving me crazy, man. I'm telling you.
What's
but
going
at least
on?
It keeps
you
my,
upgraded.
At least it keeps,
did you buy a new computer or did you upgrade an existing computer?
I just upgraded one of my kids' laptops and I bought two of them with it. Because, I got my kids one. I gave the youngest
kid. Are you having
one.
Problems on all of the systems or just the upgrade system?
The upgrade is just not working, dude. I'm telling you. But I'm also having problems with the disc on it, and I think I'm going to take it to a local occupational college and have them work on
That's
it.
That's a good idea. Yeah, if a hard drive is giving you problems, it's not the operating system.
Well, the CD drive, rather.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
but
I'm
Vista. But we have. I mean, Vista is. I do not, and I haven't ever recommended that you upgrade existing hardware to Vista. That's where your troubles begin. But if I
had
system,
to give him, I had to give him something. This is the cheapest way. What I did is I took an external hard drive and I put the software on the recovery disk on it, and then I ran it through
idea.
That.
That's a good idea.
I kind of got around it. Yep. But my problem is, like, if I'm using Craigslist, for instance, and I click one of the addresses to reply to somebody or whatever, it constantly pops up that default Windows Outlook, I guess it is. I've never used Outlook in my life. All I use is web-based email. So what I get is this thing pops up, and I can't seem to tweak it so that what pops up is my Yahoo
account, right.
or a Gmail or Hotmail, whatever.
Which account? Which one do you want to use?
I want to use Yahoo, dude.
Okay. So the reason you understand what's going on is that Windows keeps information about what your default email program is.
I tried switching it. I went through the whole.
But the problem. But the problem is that because Yahoo is web based, Windows says that's not a program. That's not a program. So in order for this to work, you have to go through a kind of some hoops. Basically, you have to have a program on your system so that you can tell Windows that this program is your default Windows email program. And generally, the way people do this is they use Yahoo Messenger. So you download and install Yahoo Messenger, even if you're not going to use it.
I have it.
Okay, perfect. And if you
but I don't run it.
You don't have to run it. You don't have to run it. You just make sure that once Yahoo Messenger is installed, you should see now Yahoo Mail as one of your default email choices. So now check in the Internet Explorer's options and see if you can see Yahoo Mail.
Oh, the regular browser internet?
Yeah, that's yeah. That's where you have to do
it. Okay, I can pull that up because it's a tab that I add. Well, it's one of the little buttons I've added.
And if you don't see it, then I want you to reinstall Yahoo Messenger. What happens is when you install Yahoo Messenger, it installs a little stub program. Because Yahoo knows this is a problem because they know people want to they want you to use Yahoo Mail, or Google wants you to use Gmail as your default email, but it's a browser window. It's not an application. So Windows goes, I need an application. So when you install Yahoo's Messenger, it installs a little stub application that it says, this is Yahoo Mail. Now Windows says, oh, you have Yahoo Mail. When you make that your default mail, now what that little stub application does is just opens a browser window. And it should use the Slim browser. It should open the browser window for your default browser in Yahoo Mail. That's supposedly the workaround anyway. So you need the newest Yahoo Messenger. And then you need to, if it doesn't work, reinstall it. And you should have a drop-down option for Yahoo Mail inside Internet Explorer tools options. It's the same, by the way, as Internet options in your control panel. I think that's, what do they call it in Vista? This is another thing they did in Vista that drives me crazy. They changed the name of all the control panels. Instead of add, remove programs, it's now programs and features. Let me see if they still have Internet options. Yeah, it's still called Internet options in the control panel. So you'll go to your Internet options and you'll choose under the programs tab, you're going to choose what your default, you set your internet programs, what your default email program is. Boy, it's a lot more complicated than Vista, I have to say. Set your default programs. Why? But it needs a program. That's the problem. And this is comes up all the time with internet-based email systems. It will come up with any of them. Let me see if... I don't have it. I have to install Yahoo Messenger to have that as a choice. Oh, when you hear problems like this, this is why nobody's upgrading to Vista. This is why people are saying, Vista, forget it. Forget about it. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You may find yourself living in a
700 megahertz auction. FCC is taking all that UHF bandwidth that they chased the television stations off and is selling it for, they expect, $10 to $15 billion. So Bill Handel asked me a really interesting question yesterday, and I didn't have an answer. I have to do some research on it. I still don't have an answer. Is it really selling it or leasing it? What are the terms? How long do you get it? Couldn't you, lease it for 10 years? I think one of the issues is a company like Verizon, which is one of the big bidders, AT&T or Google, isn't going to buy that spectrum and invest a lot of money in building infrastructure unless they know they've got it for a while. So it might, 99-year lease? I don't know. I mean, you'd have to do a long-term lease. But I wonder. I mean, ultimately, it's our property. The people of the U.S. Spectrum is our property, regulated by the government, and that's why the FCC can take back a license from a radio station. And say you don't get it anymore. I imagine it's something similar to that, but I don't know what the rules are for getting that spectrum back. Anyway, Google will be certainly one of the bidders. They've put up the $4.6 billion bond. Some say that Google got involved because they just wanted the rules to be changed in order for that. And the FCC agreed somewhat, not completely, but somewhat. They compromised on what Google wanted. Essentially, Google's plan and desire and what they got was the requirement that anybody who buys this spectrum does open it up to other users. So sell off parts of it or make it accessible to other people. That way Google could without spending $10 billion, participate somehow. So some people say Google's going to bid the minimum 4.6, and then drop out. That'll make those put those rules in effect and then drop out. Others think, and I'm one of them, that Google's sincere about their interest in this, that Google would like to, in fact, get in the wireless business. They see a lot of money in it, and you know, like we can't forget that the founders of Google, the guys who run Google, have somewhat of a altruistic vision. They somewhat of a community-focused vision, and I think that they believe that by creating a new wireless business, offering perhaps, I don't know, free internet or inexpensive internet or ad-based internet over the entire U.S., this would be a good thing, and I agree. A lot of people disenfranchised can't get internet. It's either too expensive or not available, high-speed internet, and I'd love to see Google, you know, make this ubiquitous. So I'm very interested. The auction's going to take 2 months. And unfortunately, while you could follow the bidding, none of the numbers have names attached. So we know the bidding has gone up almost to $3 billion. It will be a lot higher before it's over. But we don't know who is making those bids, and we won't until we know the winning bid. I wouldn't be surprised to see Google win this one. I really wouldn't. 8880, and I hope they do. I'd like to see. Maybe it's just wishful thinking. I'd like to see them win this one. Robert on the line from Los Angeles. Hello, Robert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I have a really simple question. When I turn on my computer, the My Documents folder remains on the desktop. It opens up.
It pops open.
When I start the computer, yeah. And it stays on the desktop until yeah. I turn it off, of course. Or, you know,
you can't close it?
No, I can't. I mean, I can close it, but only after the computer is stopped. Like I said, when it turns on, it automatically opens up.
Yeah.
The My Documents folder opens up.
Right.
And then I have to...
Eventually, you can close it. It takes a little while to start up.
Yes.
This is a little
yes.
trick Microsoft plays on us all to make it look like it's booting faster. It pops up the screen, even though you can't do anything yet. So it makes you feel
right.
like, oh, it's booted. But you still have to wait a minute or so before it really is available. There are a number of reasons this can happen. Usually it's because of damage to your registry. What's happening is that the My Documents is kind of opening. It's like an auto run. It's opening on startup. So
uh-huh.
you have to yep. look at all the places where things start up. You know, make sure
right.
that you didn't accidentally drag an alias to My Documents into the startup folder for is a kind of a primitive example. I'm sure that's not what happened, but you should check. Make sure that,
okay,
you know, doesn't say My Documents there. You should also, it could, and it often is a registry issue. And that...
It must be a registry issue because I've gone to services and I've gone to...
Oh, good. All right. You're smart enough to have looked in all the places it could start up. Yeah, it's not unusual. The registry is such a bad design. It's so easily mm-hmm. corrupted. So you're going to run regedit. Is this
okay.
XP or Vista?
XP.
Yeah, you're going to run regedit. You know, you click start, run,
uh-huh.
regedit.
Right.
And you're going to look in the two different places, the HKLM and HKCU. And it'll
okay.
be in, there's a key in there for software, Microsoft Windows current version.
Uh-huh.
That's where you always look in Windows. You look in that current
okay.
version folder. And you're going to
okay.
look for, you're going to look at the run keys. The
uh-huh.
run once keys, you're going to look for somewhere in those keys where it says open My Documents. Now, it can also be a spyware problem or a program problem. So it may not say, you know, C:\ My Documents. It might say something else. So you're going to have to kind
okay.
of look around in there. But okay. Or you could do this in msconfig, but you want to find something that's opening that My Documents. It's not an uncommon bug. Doesn't seem to happen as much in Vista, but it was a big problem in XP. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I want
am Leo Laporte, the tech guy from the Tech Guy Labs. Let's go all the way across the country, all the way to beautiful Manhattan, where Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo, lurks with a gadget. He is the Gizwiz. We do a show every day called the Daily Gizwiz, and we do a show every week called the Weekly Gizwiz. Hello, Dick.
We are so clever in naming those things.
Yeah, Daily Gizwiz and Weekly Gizwiz.
The Weekly, I don't know how you come up with them.
I tell you.
I was stumped for an hour, and you said, well, how about for the daily one, the Daily Gizwiz, and how about for the weekly one, the Weekly Gizwiz? I said, Leo.
Amazing.
No wonder you're where you are.
It's just
where are you, by the way?
By the way, I'm in the Tech Guy Labs. It's just a good thing that you're the Gizwiz, because if you wouldn't work the Gizwiz, it would have just been the Daily and the Weekly. And nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Confused.
Try to find that on Google.
Yeah.
Weekly. Anyway.
I'm looking for Weekly. Don't you know, I feel sorry for people.
Yeah.
On a
people in general?
Completely tangent here. With names like, you know, John Smith or Mary, you know, Jones, because you Google them and there's 8 million other ones.
Yeah.
So it's good to have an oddball name like Dick DiBartolo. I bet you if I Google Dick DiBartolo, you're the only one.
I may be.
Let me see.
But I signed a privacy agreement with Google.
You see, when you just Google Dick DiBartolo, number one entry, gizwiz.biz, your website. Number two, Dick DiBartolo in Wikipedia. And then number three, the Twit Netcast Network, where you do.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's
and now Google your own name and see where you are.
Okay. What is my name? Leo Laporte. Okay. Number one, my blog. Number two, Twit. Number three, Tech Guy Labs. Number four, Wikipedia.
All right.
Nowhere does it mention the Daily Gizwiz.
Yeah, that's exactly. Let me get Google on the other phone. Hang on.
Hello, Mr. Google.
just watch your screen for a minute.
No, wait a minute. Come on. No, we got to do a gadget. I don't have all the time in the world. There are people on the phone dying to talk. What's your gadget this week?
The gadget of the day is from our friends at Logitech, and it's the DeNovo, N-O-V-O, mini keyboard. Now, this is yet another way not to have to get up from the couch.
I like that.
You do? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of people now have their PC screen coming up on their giant LCD screens.
Yes.
So the mini keyboard is a way to control Windows media, all the entertainment buttons or the PC buttons. And they do it two ways. It has a little switch on it. In the media position, the keys light up. I think the keys are green. And that way you can go in and see your video files. And just the keys that Windows Media needs will light up.
Now, this thing is about the size of a remote control. So, I mean, it's like...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just like holding a remote control in the vertical position.
But that's cool. So when it lights up, that makes it easier to use. Plus, you're usually in a darkened room when you're watching TV.
Exactly. If you put it over to the PC mode and want to use the keyboard, if you want to send someone a text message or IM someone, the keys are backlit.
Oh,
really,
great.
A spiffy little guy. It's Bluetooth. Bluetooth 2.0. Comes with a little Bluetooth dongle. Lithium ion battery. Comes with a little AC charger, so you plug it in.
I'd like to get this maybe for a phone. I wonder if this would work with a Bluetooth phone.
Boy, you know, I didn't see that in the press materials.
No, they just mentioned Windows, but boy, that would be...
That would be... You know, it says Bluetooth 2.0. That would be a great way to be able
now,
to...
Did you type on it? How is it to type?
You know, it's... I'm certainly not going to type a mad script on it, but I can type fairly fast using a couple fingers. You know, at CES where they were demoing it, I just typed in, this is the new Logitech keyboard, and it's fairly easy to type on. And I did all that without, you know, any mistakes.
But see, because it has a lid, you not only for the coffee table, like, just to put it there, but also you could throw it in a briefcase or a... laptop bags. That's why I'm kind of
intrigued
by this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Translucent lid. You can see light through it.
Does it use AAA batteries? What kind of...
No, it's lithium ion, built-in battery.
Oh.
Well, actually, the battery is replaceable if it...
But it's a rechargeable.
It's a rechargeable lithium ion. Comes with a little AC adapter, so you plug that little guy in, charge it up, and then I don't know.
They say, they say about a month worth of use.
Wow.
Between charges, which is great.
That is great. That is great. Now, it's not available exactly yet, but probably maybe mid-February. Okay. They were talking mid-February at CES.
And $150, I see.
$150, you can pre-order.
That's a little pricey, unfortunately.
I was going to say, if you're not in a dying rush, I'm sure once it gets in the full supply chain, right, it'll come down.
It's beautiful, looking at these pictures, it really is gorgeous.
It really is nice looking. Well, you know, Logitech, they make really nice stuff
they
over
do.
There. I love their stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, they started out with just a couple of SKUs or a couple of items, and now they are keyboards and little unique things like this, which is filling in a niche that I don't think anybody's in yet.
There was a rumor flying that Microsoft might buy Logitech, but nothing came of that. That was last week or
I don't want that.
No, I like it. There's some competition. They're a Swiss company. They actually invented the mouse.
Cheese?
No, not Swiss cheese. Although they did, they do make mice.
Oh, that's, in a very roundabout, convoluted way, that's almost a joke.
It is. It's almost good enough for Mad Magazine. If you want to get a free copy of Mad Magazine, all you got to do is go to Dick's site and play the What the Heck Is It contest. He's got some weird, wacky gadget up there right now. I swear it's a pickle puller. But he says no.
That was last month.
It's this month.
One day, I'm going to find something to which pickle puller works and put it up there.
just to fool me.
To let you win once.
Okay, I think it's not a pickle puller. But go there and...
Oh, you won!
if you go there, you could make a guess. If it's the right guess, you win a Mad Magazine, but also the clever guesses win, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Gizwiz, GIZWIZ.biz. And Dick, we'll talk again next week with another great gadget.
I'll be here.
You better. I love Dick DiBartolo. He is such a crazy man. Logitech did not invent the mouse, but they were one of the first companies to sell it way back when. Long before Microsoft or anybody else was in the mouse business. Lance in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, Lance. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How you doing?
Hello, Leo. How you doing, man?
I'm great.
That's good. I'll tell you what, I'm glad XM has you loaded on them because I'm a big rig driver and I can catch you from Maine to L.A. and it's good listening
great.
To you.
XM 158.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's what I'm listening to right now.
Fantastic.
What I wanted to ask you about, I want to pull the trigger on getting myself my first laptop. And I look around, and I really don't want to spend more than like $700. I know that's low end, but I don't really do more than, just surf the net, email, cruise the internet. So I don't need something that's going to be gaming and stuff like this. So what I was wondering was, does it matter which manufacturer you get, or does it depend more on the guts that are in it, like AMD as opposed to Intel? And
Laptops, it does matter more because a laptop is not a standard design. A PC, a tower, that's pretty standard. But a laptop, every manufacturer has to make compromises to get everything into such a small package. And they make different kinds of compromises depending on the manufacturer. I would say Dell would be the first place I'd go for a inexpensive laptop. Their Inspirons start around $500. They're nicely built. They're solid, and I think they make very good machines. I don't think you're going to find anything in that price range from Lenovo, which is my other favorite laptop manufacturer. You can look at Sony, Fujitsu. I don't like HP's laptops particularly. I don't recommend them. They're nice. They're decently made. They're not my favorite. Toshiba used to be kind of dominant in the laptop marketplace. Not so much anymore. I would stick with Dell first and foremost. Lenovo.
That's That's funny because Dell, actually they have one right now that's like $270 off. That brings it into my price range. And the odd thing is they offer it with XP, and you can upgrade it to Home Vista. After listening to you and,
get XP.
And a lot of other places,
yeah,
I'm like,
you bet.
Why would you want to upgrade for
Yeah, some people call that a downgrade. That's one of the advantages of both Dell and Lenovo is they, because they sell a lot of business laptops, they still offer XP. You know, Microsoft was going to pull it off the market by January, and there was so much demand for XP, they can't. And if you apply all the patches, make sure that XP is locked down, you make sure you update it whenever there's an update, I think XP is every bit as secure as Vista without some of the hassles, frankly, of Vista. So yeah, go ahead and get that Dell. I think you'll be very happy. I think it'll be fine in the truck. I wouldn't tie it to the hood, but if you keep it on a seat, it's going to be just fine. Those things are pretty robust when it comes to vibration and so forth. All right, Lance. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think Dell is making very nice quality stuff. If you could spend a little more, I'm just wondering. They are having a sale right now. They're always having a sale, aren't they? Just wondering if you can get the new, oh, they're so pretty, 1330 or 1530 down. And no, you can't get that down to that price. They're 1,000. They started 1,000. They're just beautiful. The Inspirons, you know, they're just a little thicker. And that's the thing, that a laptop manufacturer, in order to get it to look, you know, look at the MacBook Air is a very good example. In order to get it to look a certain way, they make certain compromises. You just want to make sure you can live with the compromises that they make. Normally, I say try the keyboard, try the screen, use it if you can in the environment you're going to use it. Nice thing about Dell is they have a pretty good return, pretty liberal return policy. So you can order it, take it in the truck, see if it works for you, and you can always return it if you have 21 days to return it. They have to do that because they don't have as many stores as these other guys, and they know people can't come and try before they buy, and it makes people uncomfortable to buy something sight unseen. So that's true. A lot of the mail order vendors, they have a very liberal return policy so that you can try before you buy. So that'd be my recommendation. Hey, thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-88-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Toll free. There was a slight upheaval in the force the past 2 weeks in the virtual worlds, the online worlds. I guess there were trouble with power in Seattle on Thursday. The Steam servers were down for 2 hours, according to one of our chat room folks. I guess that's a big deal if you're a Half-Life player. Or what else does Steam? Steam serves a lot of online gamers. And when those servers are down, they're offline. 2 hours. 2 hours they had to go without Half-Life. Oh, no. Oh, how horrible. Counter-Strike down. Oh, Team Fortress down. Oh, no. What are we going to do? 2 hours. We're going to have to converse. A bigger story, in some ways, is Second Life had to close its banks. Did you follow that? That's just weird. So Second Life is a virtual reality environment that people go in. And, I have a character in there, and I have a membership there, and I never use it. I'm Prune Face Spatula. Maybe that's why I'm embarrassed to show up. That's my name in Half-Life. Or Second Life, I should say. There's Half-Life and there's Second Life. Prune Face Spatula is my name. I never go in there anymore. Mostly because it's kind of boring after a while. And I think most of the... This is something you never hear in the news reports about Second Life. Mostly, it's an adult area. It's mostly about Well, you know. Which, to me, is not only creepy, but no fun. I don't understand it. But, you know, you can buy specials. I don't even want to talk about it. But that's what people do. In my opinion, that's really why Second Life is so big. But there were these banks in Second Life. And, you know, Second Life tries to emulate real life. So some users, this wasn't set up by Second Life. Second Life has a currency, the Linden dollar, which is something like 263 Linden dollars to one U.S. dollar. You know, it's worth like a quarter of a cent. But you can cash them out. You know, so people who earn money in there can make a lot of money. I mean, there have been rumors that there are millionaires out of Second Life. People who have, you can buy real estate and sell it or rent it. You can sell your creations, your clothing or your buildings or your gestures and make money doing that in Linden dollars. But you can convert them to real dollars. And so some people, some users set up banks where they said, oh, you know, put your money in here. Give it to us, and we'll pay very high interest rates because we'll lend it out or we'll put it to work. Or I don't know what the plan was. One of these banks was a scam. It was a pyramid scheme. They'd take the money. They'd pay some benefits, some interest to the earliest users, but they continue to build the pyramid, and they were mostly skimming it off for themselves. Real, and it ends up being real money. So when Linden figured this out, they closed all the banks. I'm sorry. I have a hard time taking this too seriously. I know, you know, initially I thought, oh, wow, this is what they talk about in sci-fi. This is the, you know, the virtual life that you'll plug into and it'll become more and more of your real life. This is fascinating. And, you know, their Swedish consulate is in there. Reuters has a bureau. This is serious. And then after playing with it for a while, I realized, no, it's not. It's pathetic. It's just not that interesting. Jim, Los Alamitos, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I'm running Windows Vista, and when I'm on a web page or composing an email, my computer will freeze until I left click the mouse. Then it's okay for a minute or two, and it happens again.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
No, I can't get through an email or a web page without left clicking, you know, numerous times.
Really? But left clicking fixes it.
Left click will, I'll be able to scroll again, and then I'll be able to start typing again.
I'm not sure what's going on there. How is this a newer computer?
Yes, it is.
And it came with
Sony
Vista.
Bio.
And it's a Sony.
Vista Home Premium. It's a Sony Bio.
And a couple of possibilities. It sounds like the computer might be getting busy, and the left mouse click is telling it, "Hey, I'm here still."
Correct.
I'm awake. Don't get busy. So what I would suggest doing is turning off. Services and background processes that you don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Have you added a lot of software to this, or has it always done this?
It's always done it. Yes.
Yeah, I would. Well, in that case, call Sony. Say I want a new one. This is broken. That's not normal behavior for Vista. Let's put it that way. It also could be a driver issue. It could be a hardware issue. My first guess is it sounds like that it thinks you're idle, and so as a result it starts doing something like indexing the hard drive, something that's taking up cycles and is keeping you from making your system unresponsive. But it's hard to say. And if it started doing this when you got it from Sony, it did it from the beginning, then you're still under warranty, right?
I got it at Costco, and I'm still within my 90 days, and it is under warranty. Yes.
Yeah. So it's did this from day one.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something wrong with it. I would take it back. It shouldn't be doing that out of the box. That means it's not something you added. It's not some service you turned on. It's not something weird that happened to it. It means it's broken, basically. And I don't think there's any easy way to fix it, Jim. I would just take it back and get another one and say, hey, you know. And the problem is Sony isn't great on phone support. Justin's on the line from North Hollywood, California. Hello, Justin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm fantastic.
Doing pretty good. All right, I'm in the military. I'm going to be deploying to the Middle East here shortly.
Wow.
I want to have access to my home files, but the military blocks a lot of websites like LogMeIn and Orb and all that stuff.
Interesting.
How could I set up my home computer so I can stream my files or, you know.
See, what you have to do is find something that they're not, some port they're not blocking.
Okay.
LogMeIn supports something called Hamachi, which was in the past was a way to do this. It's because generally it's not seen by servers. It looks pretty normal. I'm surprised. So they block log me in, they block go to my PC, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we got a page that pops up that says this is restricted, and I guess because, you know, every page, it's like categorized. So it looks for, you know, this is a...
I would go to logmein.com and look at Hamachi, which is essentially a VPN. And the thing about the VPN is they can't block that because it uses standard secure ports. Unless they're really sniffing the traffic itself, then they might notice. Good luck, Leo Laporte. Thanks for your service. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. We're talking about high tech, computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and digital cameras and home theater and all, you know, all that stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, 8888-ASK-LEO. You could join us in the chat room, about a little less than 200 people, a little... fewer than 200 people in there right now. I'm sure we can accommodate more. Just go to irc.dslextreme.com. And you can also go to our show notes. Sasha's writing it all down now. Sasha's show notes, I should say, are at techguylabs.com. And there's links there to a lot of other stuff. I've been playing, you know, have you heard of Twitter? There's something about it. I don't know. It's addictive. I just love it. It's twitter.com, twitter.com. And it's very difficult to describe what it is. The simple mechanics of it are you can, via your cell phone or the web or a variety of other ways, post 140-character messages that other people can see. People could follow you. You could follow people. You could see, you know, your friends. And it's used in a lot of interesting kind of different ways. Some people call it microblogging. It's just 140 characters is the SMS text limit. So that's where that number comes from. So it's like people are writing short little posts of 140 characters. My friend Robert Scoble was at Davos, the big World Economic Forum in Davos this past week. He was using Twitter to tell people what he was up to and to even post videos. So, you know, he'd say, I've got a video of Bono, you know, and you could, and the link was there. So Twitter could be used like that. It's there are a number of people now on Twitter who are, there's a New York Times reporter on there. There's a Time Magazine correspondent on there. All the political candidates are on there. John Edwards was the first to use it, and he actually posted. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have, Ron Paul have accounts, but they don't post it that often. And I don't even know if it's them or their staffers. I have an account. Leo Laporte's my account. It's kind of interesting. But here's something interesting. I just started doing. It's kind of as, I don't know. You know, when you get these new platforms, this new media stuff, it's interesting because you can do new and different things. And you never know exactly what's going to come of it. So we've created an account, Molly Wood, Tom Merritt, and I, Jason Howell and I. They're the hosts of an online news show called Buzz Out Loud that's on CNET, daily tech news show. I was on the show on Thursday, and we just kind of had this brainstorm. Let's do a round-robin novel. So you get 140 characters. Each of us, in turn, will write, I guess, another sentence or two from the novel. If you want to follow it, we're just starting. It's only a few days old. 140 novel is the account on Twitter. So it's Twitter, twitter.com/140novel. I'm not saying it's good writing. I'm not saying it's even interesting writing. I'm just saying the idea is kind of intriguing. You know, people have done this kind of round robin writing before around campfires, and you know, it's an interesting game, I guess you could call it. But we've got, you know, we're starting, there's something kind of interesting going on. About 381 people are following it. You can add it, or you can just go to the website and visit it. I don't know. I just, to me, I think that's one of the most interesting things about what's going on is that it's all new. It's all fresh. It's never before been done. These podcasts, or, you know, YouTube videos, or Twitter, or web pages, all of this is new. And it's really fun and interesting to see what kinds of kind of crazy, wacky, most of the time throwaway ideas people have. But sometimes, every once in a while, really, really good. For instance, YouTube. I mean, here, a couple of guys just said, you know, it'd be really cool if anybody who wants to could post video that everybody else could see online. And if it were free and easy, this was only a year and a half ago. They created YouTube, sold it within a year for, at the time, it was $1.6 billion. I think it's gone up over $2 billion now. $2 billion to Google. It's just, you know, it's just these crazy little ideas. Most of them are nothing. I know you can't make any money off of a Twitter novel, but it's just really fun, I think, and really interesting and really exciting to be present at the birth of a new medium. And I think that's what's going on. That's why it's interesting. And that's the kind of thing I talk about on the show. 8888 Ask Leo if you want to participate. Pat's in Chino, California. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Leo. I hope you can help me.
I hope so, too.
Before my son went into the Air Force, he dismantled his computer and set one up for me and gave me his, installed his Windows XP.
Right.
I recently tried to do an update, and now I'm getting that funny little message that I may have a counterfeit.
Yeah. What happens when you do the update, and you probably didn't even notice, because they do it very quickly, is they say, oh, would you like to install Windows Genuine Advantage?
Right.
What could be wrong with that? It's Windows, it's genuine, it's an advantage, it must be good. What it really is a piracy, anti-piracy measure. They should say Windows piracy protection or something like that, but they don't want to say that because you won't install it. So when you install it, what it does is it checks. Now, here's what it's checking. It's saying, is this copy of Windows, is it still on the original machine that it was put on? Oh, no, it's not, because he changed enough of that machine, Pat, that it's saying, oh, this is a different machine. They think it's been installed on two different machines at the same time. Simple enough. You call Microsoft.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they probably give you a number in that message. And you say,
don't remember, but I could do it again.
You'll get it again. Well, I'll get it for you.
Okay.
So you call Microsoft and you say, here's what happened. You tell them the story. You tell them the truth.
Okay.
And they'll go, oh, okay. It's not running on the old machine anymore. He's moved it to a new machine. That's fine.
Oh, super.
Yeah. So generally speaking, when this happens, you just call them and they'll revalidate it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I can't guarantee what Microsoft's going to do, but my experience has been that they're pretty lenient about that. And I think you've got a perfectly reason. I mean, look, it's not running on the old computer. Just, you know, the computer has been heavily updated. And so, you know, that's what you fix. I'm looking for the number right now to call. I don't see it on here.
It's one of those ones where it doesn't take 3 days to get through.
No. Somebody will answer right away. WGA notifications.
Thanks. Can I ask you another quick question?
Sure, while I'm looking.
Unrelated.
Yeah.
Are there any free websites where you can download digital video movies to share?
Free?
Yeah.
Well, you're obviously not going to get a copy of, 300 or even the Magnificent Ambersons free. But you can get other kinds of movies for free.
Like movies, I mean, from my digital camera that are video.
So, I see. You want to upload your movies to a site so that other people could see them.
Right.
Oh, heck yeah. There are a lot of sites like that. I was just talking about YouTube. Once YouTube got $2 billion from Google, everybody and their brother put up sites.
Yeah, but it's 3 minutes, though. Is there anything that's longer, like 20 minutes or so?
Well, I'll give you a number of them and you can take a look. Yeah. YouTube limits it now to 100 meg. If you sign up for an account, I think it's 100 megabytes or 10 minutes.
Okay.
There's a couple of sites that I like. I use Vidler, VIDDLER.com, for my videos. And the reason I like it is your friends can put comments on the video.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So it's really fun. As the video goes, these little balloons pop up as your friends say things. So I like that. There's blip.tv.
Okay.
There's Rever, R-E-V-V-E-R. There's also Google Video, which is a sister site, video.google.com. I don't know if they have a limit. Let me think.
What worth else? Checking into.
Yeah, there's so many of these upload sites. I pay for smugmug.com, which allows me to upload high def video, but it's a little pricey. It's for pros more. Let me think of other places you could upload your video. I would try those. I'm sure one of those will have a less of a limit. Blip, BLIP.TV. Rever is another one, and Vidler.
Google Video and Vidler.
And Vidler. Yeah, Rever is R-E-V-V-E-R.com. The reason people use Rever and Vidler is because they can make a little bit of money on it. Rever and Vidler will insert commercials, and then they will... So you probably don't want to use this for your video. And then they'll pay you some money. Another one is Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O.
Okay.
Vimeo does high def, so if you have a higher quality... But all of these are good, and I'm sure that one of them will allow you to upload a longer clip.
Fantastic. Now I stalled you for the Microsoft number.
Oh, yeah. I stopped looking. Tell you what,
we'll
take a break, and I'll come back. I'll get the number for you.
Thank you so much.
You're
I appreciate
very welcome.
Your time.
You're welcome, Pat. Take care.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's it. You know, that's the whole anti-piracy, the whole authentication system in Windows. That's how it works. It does a little survey of all the hardware in your computer. And it calculates a number based on that. Things like, you know, your network MAC address, what video card you have, it actually looks at drivers. It does a big calculation. They're not completely forthcoming about exactly what it does, though, because they don't want people to figure out a way around it. Then it figures out a number. When you authenticate your Windows, it uploads that information to Microsoft, sends you down a serial number. Now, if you change, and they're also not completely clear on how much you have to change to cause a problem. Roughly, they say four components. Then you won't be able to authenticate. You have to call them. And they're pretty good at that. You know, say, well, okay, here's we'll authenticate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Tech Guy, thanks to Mike B. in our chat room. The Microsoft Windows Vista Consumer Product Activation phone number. Oh, I don't know if it's Vista. I think it was XP, actually. Oh, well. This number, if it doesn't work, they'll forward you. The other one is 866-740-1256. 866-740-1256. You call them. And, I would say, look, my son rebuilt the computer. Put a lot of new components in, which is the truth. And I don't think they're going to give you any trouble. Interesting article in my friend John C. Dvorak's blog. He got an email from Alex Pornell, who is a great tech geek, the son of Jerry Pornell, a columnist for Byte Magazine for many years. Alex said, we've been trying to install a Microsoft-provided Windows Genuine Advantage product key on an XP Pro machine for the last week. It never worked. We bought it. We got it from Microsoft. Apparently, the problem is that the machine started out as Windows XP Home and was later upgraded to XP Pro, and WGA has problems with that. He says after a week of attempting to get the Windows Genuine Advantage validation to pass and repeated calls to Microsoft. By the way, this isn't somebody off the street. Alex is well known. The Pornell name is well known and carries a lot of weight. So I know they got to the highest levels at Microsoft. He says, after a week, we were told the server is down and being worked on. This was posted yesterday. Server was down last year, and Microsoft said this will never happen again. Apparently it has. You know, it's just very frustrating to me that Microsoft feels it necessary to do this. Bill Gates, from day one, has been so virulently anti-piracy. is very, very famously in the 70s, when before software was even really very common, went to a user group in I think it was Albuquerque, and yelled at them up and down saying, you got to stop pirating our paper tapes of BASIC. This is in the days of paper tapes. 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and he's still, you know, Microsoft is still has this paranoia about stolen copies, and they keep upping the copy protection, and it never works well. And it, you know, Microsoft themselves said something like 5% of all Windows Genuine Advantage failures, counterfeit notices, were in error. Millions. That means millions of people with legitimate paid for copies of Windows are having to deal with this. Where is that right? And I applaud Apple. Apple's never done any of this on their operating system. I pray they don't. Of course, Apple's in a different situation, right? Because they sell the hardware. So they're not really losing any money. You know, if you steal a copy of OS X, yeah, they're losing some money, but they already got you for the computer. And you bought an earlier version of OS X. So I think they don't have to worry as much. I don't know what the answer is. I could tell you that WGA, Windows Genuine Advantage, is not the answer. It's a miserable failure. And I suspect one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, people are just not flocking to Vista. I think you're going to, and more and more people are buying Macs and moving to Linux and finding something other than Windows. You know, how long does it have to go where you mess with your customers before the customers just say, they throw up their hands and say, all right, guess you don't like me. Rose, Moreno Valley, California. Hello, Rose.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm sorry. I'm fine. Thank you. You know what? I was calling you because I just went back to the store, returned a Bluetooth.
Yeah?
And I had it. I gave it a try, and I tried it 2 weeks, and they gave me all these little attachments, you know, to customize it and try it on both sides, right, left ear.
Do you have a little tiny ear?
Yes, I do.
You have a little tiny ear. Oh, how cute. And all of these things are too big. They're not comfortable.
They're so big, and I feel I gave it a try. I was hoping maybe I could get used to it. I feel like it's going to fall, and yeah. I'm kind of frustrated, and I called you to see if you could suggest something.
So you want a Bluetooth?
I just have to keep on trying them.
Well,
on
I can make some recommendations. You want a Bluetooth headset, one of those little earpieces for your cell phone?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Is it when you're walking around, or is it just in the car?
Just in the car, or, you know, okay, walking around and in the car.
Okay, because if it's not, you know, if you don't need to put it in your ear, they make, there are some very good devices that are just, they don't go in your ear. They're like little speakers. I use something from Blue Ant that's just a little magnetic thing that goes on the visor of my car, is Bluetooth. And then when I get in the car, when the phone rings, it just automatically rings that. I press a button and this microphone's there and the speaker's there, and I don't have to put anything in my ear. But it's not so good for walking around.
Well, yeah, I need it because you know, I have to deliver and pick up stuff.
I see. So you're walking around.
So
well, here's one I would try that has different size earpieces. If you have a really tiny ear canal, I understand it's really difficult because these things. And you know, you could go and get a custom-made earpiece. You can go to hearing aid companies and they'll make you an earpiece. That's what we use in TV that would fit perfectly. And then you can connect it to a Bluetooth device, but that's really expensive. It's like another $150.
Yes, I would think something customized would.
Take a look at the Plantronics Voyager. Did you try a Jawbone? Was that one of the ones you tried?
Yes. And you know what I was getting? The people were telling me that the reception, the sound was very nice.
Yeah, they sound good, but if they don't fit your ear, that's no good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll have some more choices for you in a second.
Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or visit him online at dslextreme.com.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is Steve Gibson, our security guru from GRC.com. He's the author of SpinRite. You, I'm sure, have heard me recommend this on the show many times. It's a great disk maintenance utility. Also could be used to recover data. It's the program. That's from GRC.com. But every week, Steve and I do a podcast, a network, a netcast show, a show we broadcast on the internet called Security Now. We talk about security. And there's one coming up this week. We're gonna tip your hand a little bit, but if you want all the details, you want to listen on Thursday about a Windows program that I really wanted the audience to know about. It's called Steady State. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. Great to be back with you. You know, there's a problem with Windows in any sort of a public setting, which is really where this thing was created. Microsoft refers to this as sort of shared access environments. For example, in a public library where you'd like to allow a couple machines to be used for doing internet research, or in a school lab where you've got maybe 20 machines in a computer lab in a high school, and you'd like to allow students to have access to those machines. But what you don't want to allow is just random ad hoc, you know, Lord only knows what they're going to do to these machine sorts of changes.
And that's true in an office. And frankly, it's true at home. If you've got teenagers, you'd like to control what they do.
Right. So what Microsoft has done is they've packaged a beautiful solution that they call Windows Steady State. The implication of the name, of course, is that it allows a system to always be returned to a steady state, that is, to a fixed condition, which an administrator of the system is able to set up. And what's so nice about Windows Steady State is it is easy to install. It's easy to use. So most typical Windows XP users probably have enough of a sense of how Windows works to do this. And essentially, it locks the system down so that anything that happens to it while it's being used will be completely forgotten and flushed away when it is next restarted.
So if you wanted to, for instance, put it in a hotel where you just wanted it always to be the same, no matter what the customer did to it, they would sit down, they'd use it, they'd surf, they could save stuff, they could save documents, but as soon as you reboot, it's back to the way it was originally.
Well, yes, and one nice feature of this is that when a user logs on, they're given a little balloon pop-up saying no documents or settings will be saved. After you log off, be sure to save anything you need to some external location. So, for example, if someone was doing research in a library and the library wanted to allow things on the system to be recorded to a little USB thumb drive, then
you could turn that on.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is possible to say, no, we've got data on our system we don't want to allow people to export.
Right.
And there's also a large array of options which are presented in a very nice, easy, user-friendly display where you just turn checkboxes on, for example, to prevent the desktop from changing, to prevent people from dragging your start menu around and changing it. But basically, it allows you to lock a system down to whatever degree you want, but fundamentally, no matter what happens, when the user logs off or a new user logs on, it's back the way it was.
Kind of. I mean, if you've used GPEdit, it's like the group policy editor on steroids, though, and it has this additional feature of kind of resetting the hard drive. Now, if you want to use it at home, though, it is possible to create an area of the disk for each individual user that is persistent, that they can save documents and so forth.
Yes, it's not quite as easy because it would require either adding a hard drive or repartitioning the normal C drive into a second drive. The way Steady State works is that without exception, the C drive is locked down. That is the system drive. The drive that contains Windows is locked down, and that's done for the protection of the system. And an administrator is able to suspend that in order to install programs, in order to make changes right. that they want to be made persistent, and then to turn that lockdown back on again. So without exception, the C drive is always returned to its original condition. But if you had a second partition on that hard drive called, for example, D, or if you had another physical drive in the system that would be assigned a different drive letter, it's very simple in Windows to cause a user's so-called profile to be on that other drive. In fact, I believe you just drag the folder over onto that okay. drive, and Windows sees that you're dragging a user's, for example, My Documents folder and their desktop folder over to a different drive. Windows makes the changes necessary, and then because those are not on the C drive any longer, they will be maintained. So that would be perfect, for example, in a home environment where mom and dad set up a machine to be shared by the kids. They use SETI State to lock the machine down so that no permanent changes can be made. Yet, you know, Johnny and Susie and Betsy and Alan can all have their own logons, their own document sections where they're able to save their school papers right. and their music and whatever it is they want to use the machine with. So it is able to accommodate regular users where you don't, or like in an office environment where you want to be able to save your office documents, but you don't want people installing, you know, QuickBooks to do their check register or iTunes to mess with their iPods.
Now here's the best part. We saved the best for last. This is free.
Yes.
It might, you just download it from Microsoft. I'll put links in the show notes there. It originally came out in June for Windows XP. In November, they put out a beta that is for XP and Vista. And I haven't tried it on Vista, but and nor have you, I know. But presumably, it would work the same. I just think this, you know, it sounds like a really good way to make a very secure system. A virus or spyware can't modify the system permanently. So you can allow your users to kind of do what they want. They can't kind of willy-nilly install software. But you have a lot of control over what they can and cannot do. So you really can create policies that are enforced. I think this is really neat.
Yep, I really wanted to make your listeners aware of it, Leo. I think it will really come in handy for them.
It doesn't do filtering. It doesn't do, you know, parental controls. This, I mean, that Vista does that anyway. This is really just to preserve the integrity of the operating system of the computer, no matter what your users are up to. It keeps them from doing stuff to mess it up. And I think, frankly, that's probably the number one thing in security. I'm going to run this on my machine, so I can't do dumb things. I think this is really good.
Yep, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Steve Gibson's at grc.com. That's where you'll find his program SpinRite, which is a great disk maintenance utility, which can also recover data, grc.com. Also, lots of free programs there. He's famous for discovering spyware, wrote the first anti-spyware utility. You could find his famous Shields Up program to test your router and a whole lot more at grc.com. And don't forget, we're going to talk in much greater detail about Steady State on our podcast, Security Now, this Thursday at TWIT.tv. Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Leo.
Seems like such a good idea. Really does. Hey, Rose wanted to know. Rose has a little tiny ear. Little beautiful little rosebud of an ear. Actually, I have a small ear, believe it or not. A big man with a small ear. And she said the Jawbone and some other Bluetooth headsets she's tried just aren't comfortable. And that's true. I mean, they may have different earpieces you could fit in, but sometimes they're just not as small as they ought to be. So some suggestions. I mentioned the Plantronics Voyager, which I found very comfortable and seems to be a good choice. It's the Voyager 510, very inexpensive, $50, and a lot of people have had good results with it and report good comfort with it. You can get a custom earpiece. One of our listeners in the chat room suggested AveriSound.com. AveriSound.com. And AveriSound makes custom molded earpieces for a variety of stuff, including the Jawbone, I believe. They also sell their own Bluetooth device, the Soundport, that has a custom earpiece. And apparently, they're very affordable. So if you really do have a very small ear, this is the most the most comfortable way use anything they have to put in your ears to get a custom molded earpiece that fits your ear precisely. By the way, you get much better sound. You could wear it all day. They make a Jawbone custom molded earpiece. Let me see what the cost of it is. He said he paid, I think, $61. Ah, see, that's expensive. The Jawbone with the earpiece is $174. Okay, that includes the Jawbone. So the earpiece alone is $61. I haven't tried this. I'll try it. I'll send him a... I'll buy the... Because I don't know. I guess you'd have to make it yourself. I'm not sure how they would fit it. When you go to a hearing aid company, they pour wax into your ear. A little mold. They mold your ear, and then you pull it out with this great suction sound. It's not wax or some sort of strange, silly putty thing that hardens in your ear. And they go, pull it out, and they make an earpiece out of that. And it fits exactly right, which is really nice. So AverySound.com, you get a custom molded earpiece. And then, as I mentioned, there are a number, if you're just using in the car, and by the way, July 1st, state of California joins many states across the country and Britain and a lot of other countries passing a law saying you cannot hold your cell phone while you're driving. It's dangerous. So there are a number of Bluetooth devices that are hands-free. There's one called the Toothpick that looks really cool. It uses your car stereo sound system. It's the Toothpick, TheToothpick, .com. Little tiny device. It has an FM transmitter in it. Plugs into your car charger, and then it syncs up to your phone. So when you get in the car, it automatically joins, you know, pairs with your phone. So when the phone rings, you press a button, pick it up, you hear the sound through your car speakers. Nothing to install. I love that idea. So that's called the Toothpick, TheToothpick.com. And then I use a Blue Ant Super Tooth. Same idea. These things are great. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. More calls are coming. Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. A few more minutes to go. Don't forget, all week long you can hear more of me if you wanna. If you're not sick of me yet. On my Netcast network, TWIT.TV. TWIT.TV. We do 12 shows, including that Security Now show. We'll do that full steady state thing. We do the GizWiz, open source, Mac, Windows, everything. Let's get back to the phone. Stephanie on the line from Buena Park, California. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm having a problem getting Internet Explorer web pages to open on my laptop. We just hooked up wirelessly with high-speed Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get any web pages, but I can get my email.
Okay, so Internet Explorer opens.
Yes.
But it just says, it gives you that message, there's no page there or can't find a page.
Correct.
Yeah.
Web page cannot be displayed.
And you can get your email. Is your email from your Internet service provider?
No, it's through the Windows mail. It's Vista.
Vista, okay.
It's the Windows mail.
So that's configured differently. When you set up your email, you go into Vista Mail and you give it server information and so forth.
I was on dial-up about a week ago.
Right. So what's happened, I think, is that you don't have the settings. When you set up the email separately from the settings for the rest of the net, you don't have your web surfing settings correct.
Okay. And
probably all that's missing is DNS settings.
Oh, okay.
So you set those up. I mean, normally you don't have to mess with it, but since you moved from dial-up to broadband, you probably do. Are you using a broadband router?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Okay. So what you have to do is tell Windows to get all of its settings from the router. So you go into the connections, the network connections. You open up the. You might even need to create a new connection because you're connecting via the Ethernet port on your Windows, right? How does that router connect?
Connected.
How does that router connect into your computer?
To the cable comes up the wall into the modem.
Yeah.
And then to the router, and then to our desktop in the other room.
Okay, so you have an Ethernet card. So you have to tell Windows, okay, use the Ethernet card for the connection. It's clearly doing that, or you wouldn't be getting your email. So you probably don't have to modify Windows, but you probably do have to change the settings in that router and make sure that the router is getting all the settings it needs from the new internet service provider. If, for instance, it's not getting the domain name server information, that's exactly the symptom you'd have. You'd be able to get email, the net would work, but you couldn't find web pages because it can't look up the web pages. It needs to look up a name and make the name into a number using DNS.
Yeah, on the bottom left of the screen, when it says connecting to, instead of whatever web page I'm trying to go to, it has ::1 in brackets every time.
Okay, that's interesting. ::1.
Yeah, like four dots in a square.
Yeah, that sounds, okay. It's not doing the DNS. So I'm going to give you, you could try this.
Okay.
This is good. Write this down.
I am.
You're going to put in your browser 75... Actually, let me give you, well, I'll give you my website, 75, because I know the numbers, dot
126.
126. Dot 6.
6.
Dot 189. 75. Dot 126. Dot 6. Dot 189. If you put that in your browser and my webpage comes up, then we've diagnosed it properly. All you have to do is make sure that the DNS settings are being done correctly.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to give you another number for OpenDNS. OpenDNS is a website that has DNS servers that you can use instead of using your internet service provider's DNS servers. I prefer them. I use them all the time. They have some nice features, including content filtering if you've got kids. So this is the other thing you could do is open your router and tell it to use these numbers. There's a field in the router that says DNS settings. It's supposed to get those from the internet service provider. If it's not getting it properly, then you'd have this problem. Here's the DNS setting you could type in there by hand is
208.67.67.222.222.222.
So 206.67.222.222. So, you know, you surf to your router by typing 198.162.1.1 or 192.168.1.1, right? Have you done that to configure your router?
On the desktop, yes.
Yeah.
And everything works fine on that.
Yeah, because, see, that's what
laptop,
I'm thinking.
That's not,
you can't do it on the laptop. That's interesting. So the desktop's surfing fine and everything. So that means the router's properly configured. I'm suspecting that then it's the laptop you need to go into the connection settings on the laptop and tell the laptop that you're now using an Ethernet connection instead of a dial-up connection.
Okay.
So delete any dial-up connections in the laptop and start using it. And the laptop's connected via Ethernet?
Yeah, it's actually on the network of the desktop.
Yeah.
And it's connected, 5 bars, everything's good, but I just can't get it.
Oh, it's Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Okay, so there could be a whole nother set of issues. let's see, what would be the, how can I, so you try what I just said. I have a feeling it's not going to fix it. It sounds like you're having a Wi-Fi issue. I misunderstood you. I didn't understand that it was.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The wire, well, no, it's probably my fault. The Wi-Fi is not working, but the wired is. And you can get email on the laptop.
Yep.
And that means the network's fine.
So, yeah, I even put in the old dial-up cable, and I couldn't get a web page either.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a DNS issue. I would. You're going to have to go into the connections settings, and you're going to have to play with some of those settings.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what's wrong. This is a little trickier than I had initially thought, and I'm not sure exactly what to say. You could always take the laptop into a store, or a shop. And they could look at your settings, and they could tell you pretty quickly if something was right or wrong with them. That's what it sounds like. This is not unusual when you're moving from dial-up to broadband because everything is different. And probably what happened, I'm guessing what happened is the guy came in, set up your broadband with your desktop, and just didn't bother with the laptop. Good luck, Stephanie. I am out of time. I do thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.